Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Anyone can see the results of a choice after it's made. It's tougher to predict the future. What do you do when you've made a bad call and have to live with it? Today, we begin a series of discussions on making the best of a bad decision. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Some decisions are trivial. Others have extremely long-lasting effects. Listen now as Erwin Lutzer and Amy Lilly discuss Dr. Lutzer's book, Making the Best of a Bad Decision.
Friends, I'm so glad that you have joined us today for Running to Win. Our format this week is going to be somewhat different. Actually, I'm joined here today in the studio by a woman by the name of Amy Lilly. Perhaps you recognize that name. At one time, she was host of the radio program called Reflections. So Amy is going to be asking me questions, and we are going to be interacting together on a very important series of topics. Some time ago, I wrote a book entitled Making the Best of a Bad Decision. The subtitle says, How to Put Your Regrets Behind You, Embrace Grace, and Move Toward a Better Future. If you could look into my heart today, you would see a strong desire to help you, even as I have been helped, to try to understand and to come to grips with God's grace in the midst of many, many bad decisions that we have made. Amy, welcome to Running to Win.
Thank you, Pastor Lutzer. It's a privilege to be here.
And now we're going to begin on the topic of making the best of a bad decision.
Pastor, you mentioned that you wrote this book thinking that you wanted people to understand and come to grips with God's grace in the middle of these decisions that we've made. Give us a little bit more of an idea, a bigger picture of what was in your heart and what you were thinking when you started to write this book.
Well, you know, as a pastor, of course, I've seen people throughout the years make bad decisions. I've made my share of bad decisions. And one of the things that bad decisions do is they give us so much discouragement and so much regret that sometimes people don't pull out of it, actually.
Very true.
And one of the things that I like to stress is that even smart people make bad decisions. So that's why, Amy, as we're together here, we're going to be talking about a big bad decision today to give people hope. And then tomorrow is going to be very critical. In fact, we're going to refer to tomorrow a couple of times in this program because almost its entirety is going to be making the bad decision of marriage. Mm. That is marriage to the wrong person.
Yes.
I'm going to be talking to all those who have buyer's remorse. They wish they had married somebody else. So, in fact, could I just say to our listeners, first of all, thank you so much for supporting Running to Win. We appreciate you very, very much. In fact, without your support and your help, we could not continue on this broadcast. So, thanks in advance. But also, it would be great for you to get on the telephone after this program and call a friend. Because when we talk about marriage, the sensitive issue of how do we work through difficult marriage relationships and the regrets oftentimes that accompany marriage, what is God's answer? How can marriages be given hope? Well, that's tomorrow.
Pastor, one of the wonderful things that I read just at the beginning of the book was a quote that really spoke to my heart. So often when we make a bad decision, we think there is no way to fix this. It's too big. This is too big for God to change even. And you remind us God is bigger than your foolishness, bigger than the mistakes you've made, bigger than your sins, and bigger than the messes you've left along the road you've chosen up till now. And today, first, we're talking about the worst decision ever made. You begin this book with Adam and Eve. And obviously, God redeemed that decision. But why did you choose to begin there? Why did you start at the beginning of the story? Obviously, it is the beginning, and it's the first and worst decision. But what prompted your decision to start there as our starting point?
Amy, because I thought to myself, you know, if God helped Adam and Eve, who made the worst decision they could possibly make, that is to say, If you're listening here today, and obviously those of you who are listening are thinking about your bad decisions, I will assure you, you have not made a decision as bad as theirs. Mm. So I thought that if we began at the beginning, as you mentioned, Amy, and as we talk about this decision and see hope in the midst of the decision, then all who are listening would say to themselves, you know, there's hope for me. Mm. Because I want to emphasize how bad the decision really was. I mean, here they are in a good environment. Eve didn't have to worry about whether or not Adam was looking at the woman who lived next door. You know, they had everything that they wanted. Did they want more food? God could give it to them. Did they want more beauty? That also was available. And then think of what God told them. He said to them, you can eat of the fruit of every tree of the garden, except the one tree that is in the midst of the garden. You shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, I think he said, lest you die. Mm-hmm. And so Adam and Eve are there in a surrounding where you would think that they would make a wonderful decision. Well, actually, I think everybody who's listening knows what happened next and the story as it progresses. But there are so many lessons that come out of this, lessons of grace that I'll mention in a moment. But think of this. Adam and Eve there in the garden had no idea that by eating the fruit of the tree, they were going to begin a series of dominoes that would reverberate throughout all of eternity. Mm. You think of the Holocaust, you think of all of the terrible things that sin has produced, the pain throughout all the years, the death, the abuse. Mention whatever you want to mention. The seeds are all here in Adam and Eve's decision.
Wow.
And as a result of that, of course, they were in a situation where they regretted, I think, the decision that they made. They couldn't predict what was going to happen. By the way, Amy, here's a parenthesis. If they had just trusted God, believing that his way was best, they would not have fallen for the serpent's lie. But notice what the serpent says. He says, you know, is God good in effect? Did he say that you cannot eat of the tree of the garden? And that's when Eve says, you know, we can eat of all the trees except the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he says, you shall not surely die. For in the day that you eat thereof, your eyes shall be open, and you shall be like God. And it is that experience of godhood that motivated them to disobey. And of course, we know what that turned out like. Mm-hmm. But if only they would have said, you know, we can't predict the consequences. See, when God told them, you shall not die, they had no experience of death. So they were probably very curious, thinking, well, what would this be like to die?
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so, out of curiosity, believing the serpent's lie, they got into that mess.
Well, Pastor, you said something that also really resonated with me. So often we have the excuse of, if my circumstances were just different, I would do better. If I didn't have these problems or if I didn't have these temptations, everything would be fine. I would be a better person. I wouldn't make these bad decisions. But you look at Adam and Eve, they had the perfect environment, and yet they made these choices. So if they did that, how in the world can we possibly look at that and think, oh, well, if everything was different, I would be better?
That's a very good point. In fact, it's the ultimate answer to what is called behaviorism. Because behaviorism says that you respond as you do because of your environment. Mm-hmm. And if you commit a crime, it's your environment's fault. Here are Adam and Eve in a perfect environment, without any competition, even without any neighbors. And lo and behold, they sin.
Yeah.
So that indeed is a reminder. But what we want to do is to make sure that the people who are listening today understand that God was prepared for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And could I simply say to you today, as you listen to this broadcast, the situation that you are in, God is prepared for it. You didn't catch him by surprise. It's not as if he is wringing his hands in heaven, figuratively speaking, and say, well, what do I do now? God is there with you. And we can see this even in the way in which he responded to Adam and Eve, and he gave them a door of hope. What God is saying in the third chapter of Genesis is not only that Adam and Eve sinned, but what he's saying also is that bad decisions can be redeemed. And Amy, that's why at the end of this broadcast, we're going to be telling the people how they can get a copy of this book, because I believe so deeply that they need its message of redemption and hope. For example, in chapter 3, verse 15, God said very clearly, you know, that the serpent was going to be crushed. The head of the serpent would be crushed by the seed of the woman. Mm-hmm. And what he's talking about there is really a contrast of wounds. You know, the serpent would try to dethrone Christ, but all that he could do is nip his heel, if you remember the symbolism. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it says that the seed of the woman will crush your head. Oh, my friend, today I want you to visualize Jesus taking that serpent and with his heel just grinding him right into the pavement. Jesus has won a victory. It says in Colossians chapter 2, he disarmed all principalities and all powers and made a show of them openly. So Jesus has defeated Satan.
So grateful for that. And I see the reminder here in chapter 1 that the serpent cannot stop God from granting forgiveness and grace.
That's right.
He has
That's
warred right. against us since then. But God's grace, his sovereignty, and his mercy maintain throughout the generations.
And you know the passage of Scripture there in chapter 3, verse 21 of Genesis, where it says that God gave them clothing, is very important, because now what's going to happen? And isn't it amazing that what happened in the garden, we are all affected by it. Mm-hmm. Adam and Eve are hiding.
Yes.
They're hiding from God. They're not looking for God. They're running from God. And if you, my friend, today listening to Running to Win, if you have found God through Jesus Christ, could I remind you that God came looking for you? You weren't looking for him.
True.
It is God's sovereignty in terms of pursuing people that brings us to him. So you have hiding. You have blaming. You know, the whole idea, it is said the man blamed the woman blamed the serpent, and the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. So what you really have is this whole idea that it's your fault. Mm-hmm. You know, when I speak about this to an audience, and of course people can't see us here in the studio, Amy, but sometimes I ask people to watch me, and I put my hand up and I say, just think of Adam saying this, "Lord, it's this weak-willed woman that you gave me.
Oh.
She took of the tree, and then I ate. It's her fault, and you gave her to me."
So it's his fault.
And I like to say that the man blamed his wife, even though there wasn't a chance in the world that he had married the wrong one. Well, all of this, and of course, you know, the clothes now come, and they cover Adam and Eve. And what's so unique there, Amy, is in the text it says God used skins.
Mm-hmm.
What was wrong with the leaves that they had? Well, the leaves weren't permanent, and I think that those leaves are a symbol of our works. We all try to cover our sin. Mm. And you stop to think of it, we are experts at it, aren't we?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And we try to hide. We even tell ourselves lies. And there are some people listening today, very sadly, I think that we can say this, who live in two different compartments. In compartment number one, they teach Sunday school. They are upright because looking good is very, very important to them. But being good as a person isn't. So when they get home, they're in an entirely different environment, and they're an entirely different person.
Mm-hmm.
All of this has its seeds here in the garden where sin took place and where it all began. And you know, God is saying to us in the midst of this that we can have a new beginning.
Yes.
We can have a new beginning. Amy, I'm sure that in your life you can think of people who would be greatly helped by such a lesson of hope. As a matter of fact, you shared with me the other day someone that you knew.
Yes.
Who just goes from one bad decision to another. Each has terrible consequences, and yet they simply do not turn around. But if they do, If they come to God, they can still receive grace. And you know, God is going to grant us that those clothes. And of course, in the New Testament, we discover that that's the righteousness of Jesus Christ credited to those who believe. And isn't it wonderful to think of the words of David in Psalm chapter 31 when he says, "Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven and whose sin is covered." Could there be any better news than that for broken sinners?
And to be able to turn to God and give him those decisions and allow him to redeem them and make his best out of them is the biggest privilege that we can have as believers. Pastor, you talk a lot about first best and second best in the book. Choosing second best, making a decision, and then what do you do when you have made that decision that is not the best? Turning that over to God. And you talk about the second best. What exactly do you mean when you say that?
Very good question. As a matter of fact, this is so important that, this is really, I think, the second chapter of my book is on the second best, because I was on a plane one time riding with a young woman sitting next to me who told me that she was pregnant and she was going to visit her sister. She didn't know whether or not she was going to marry the father of the child. But I remember she said this, "No matter what I do from now on, things will never be the way I wanted them to be." And she said, "Either way, whether I marry him or not, I'll have to live with the second best." So that's why I wrote a chapter on the second best. I can't help but think today that there are people who are traveling the road of life, and they're on the wrong road, but they can't get off of it. You know, either because of the marriage, which we're going to talk about next time as we talk about bad marriages and marriages that at least theoretically should never have happened, or maybe vocationally or in all kinds of ways. In fact, one of the topics we're going to cover actually in this series as we are together discussing this is bad financial decisions. So there are people who are listening today who are saying, "I have to live with a second best. What do I do?" First of all, just in case I don't get a chance to say this later, Amy, it's so important. And, more and more children are being born out of wedlock. I'm still thinking of that young woman on the plane that I met. And they need to know this, that in history, we can show, and even now, God mightily uses people who were conceived out of wedlock.
True. That is true.
In fact, Erasmus, great scholar, you know, it is said in church history that Erasmus laid the egg and Luther hatched it because Erasmus gave the Greek New Testament, a new edition of the Greek New Testament to the scholarly world, et cetera, et cetera. That was his story. One of my heroes is Felix Mons, who drowned as an Anabaptist there in Zurich, Switzerland. And Felix Mons also was the product of a relationship, actually, between a priest and a young woman. So that's the point. Now, what about the second best? What I decided to do to try to get a handle on it is to look at the nation of Israel. Everyone who's listening today, I'm sure, remembers the story of how the spies actually were sent into the land. They came back, 12 spies. Two said, "Yes, let's go in and take the land," Joshua and Caleb. 10 spies. By the way, Amy, have you ever noticed this? We all know the two spies who were obedient, Joshua and Caleb. There's no way in the world that I could name one of the other 10.
That's a good point. I couldn't either.
Right. You know, we remember the heroes, but, you know, the people who buckled under pressure, who were part of the crowd, somehow we never remember them. But anyway, the point is that they came back with the report and the people voted with a majority and they said, "We're not going into the land." Now, God was very, very angry. My, you read there in the book of Numbers, the anger of the Lord burned against them. 40 years you're going to be in this desert. 40 years with a second best. Now, here's the question. And I hope that this is going to be an encouragement to everyone. What did God do for Israel during those days of, quote, the second best? Well, he did a number of things. First of all, he forgave the people. He forgave the people. In Numbers chapter 14, he says, I will forgive you. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
We could just stop there and talk to our listening audience. You've chosen the second best. You've made a foolish decision, a disobedient decision, consciously. Sometimes we make bad decisions and we're not even conscious of the fact that we're disobeying, and we might not be. We can discuss that at a later time. But then the blessing to their children, you're going to die in the desert, but your children are going to inherit the land. Isn't that wonderful? God gave them daily food. Mm-hmm. You know, the manna.
Continued to provide.
And I say to that person today who is listening to this broadcast that your second best, what you call the second best, would you hear it from my heart today? It can be God's first best for you. He'll pick you up right where you are and begin to lead you if you give him all the broken pieces, daily food, guidance. You know, there in the desert, the glory of God sometimes still did come to the people. God wouldn't have had to do that, but he did. Victory. There's a passage that says the people cried unto the Lord, and when they cried unto the Lord answered their prayer, and he gave them victory. And then you think about Joshua and Caleb themselves. Now, Amy, we don't have much time on this broadcast. Maybe we can discuss this in more detail later, but just think of it. Joshua and Caleb, they ended up also being victims, if we can use that word, it's a little too strong possibly, of the fact that they were there in the desert for 40 years also, but not because of their fault, but because right. of the fault of others.
They had made the right choice.
Mm-hmm. And today I'm talking to people who are on the wrong road, not because of your fault, but because of the fault of somebody else.
Yes.
Amy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today in the studio. And as we conclude, I want to emphasize that the book I've written entitled Making the Best of a Bad Decision, How to Put Your Regrets Behind You, Embrace Grace, and Move Forward. Now, you've heard the discussion, but in the book, there's more material. Furthermore, what you can do is actually look up the biblical references, and you can see God's grace in the midst of bad decisions. So there's hope for you. There's hope for your friends. And in a moment, you're going to be given a phone number by which you can call us so that this book can be yours, so that you can find out how you can receive your copy. Read it, share it with your friends. And as we conclude today, Amy, we're going to be talking about marriage next time. And in the midst of all of this, we're going to be talking about difficult marriages, how easy it is for people to think that divorce is the answer when in point of fact it isn't, and we'll discuss that as well. But most of all, what do you do when you're in a difficult situation? Thanks again, and thank you to all who have joined us. Thank you for your financial gifts. As I like to reiterate, it is because of your faithfulness that we can be on the air, blessing people, always leading them toward grace, toward forgiveness, because we have a mighty great God. So this is Pastor Lutzer inviting you to join us for Running to Win next time. And you have a good day all day. God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer, and thanks as well to Amy Lilly. In a moment, a word about our next Running to Win. Our purpose is to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. Dr. Lutzer's book is called Making the Best of a Bad Decision, How to Put Your Regrets Behind You, Embrace Grace, and Move Toward a Better Future. This book will be sent as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Call right now at 1-888-218-9337. That's 1-888-218-9337. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Online, reach us at rtwoffer.com. That's rtwoffer.com. Next time on Running to Win, how to handle having made a bad decision in the area of marriage. Thanks for listening. For Dr. Erwin Lutzer, this is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is sponsored by the Moody Church.